This week on Potlatch, Roy Goose and Rhoda Inuksuk of Canada's Northwest Territories and Senator Frank Peracevich. Last June in Barrow, I met Rhoda Inuksuk and Roy Goose, who were covering the Circumpolar Conference for Canadian Broadcasting in the Northwest Territories. I asked them how they started in broadcasting.
I was working at CBC part-time when I was working for social development, and I was on training. They were training me for a couple months.
In what?
And I was an operator. And I stayed there for about 2 months before I went home for Christmas. And when I got back, I had a call from the CBC manager saying that the man, Eric Oktu, was doing the NWT net, had left for another job. And he asked if I was interested in taking that job. And it was a great opportunity for me to take it. So I didn't even give it a second thought. I said that I would be very interested.
Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Iqaluit, Baffin Island, from East Nunavut. It was a great chance because that NWT net was going out to west to East Nunavut, and I speak the dialect. So it just worked out just fine for me.
Roy, where are you from, and how did you get into broadcasting?
My hometown is at Pullman Island, Northwest Territories in Victoria Island. And how I got into broadcasting was producing some native language material for my cousin who works for CBC in Nunavik. And slowly from there I decided to go into public broadcasting since there was a job opening in Nunavik. But before that I was with the Royal Canadian Air Force in communications and supply. My interest, you could say, generated from that area and expanded into civilian public broadcasting.
What does a native Canadian need in the way of qualification for broadcasting?
Well, my qualifications go back to the, as I said before, to the Canadian Armed Forces. And in order to work in a radio station in any kind of a job, you've got to be a graduate of grade 12 or better. And since I had these requirements all fulfilled, I just happened to fit into the vacant slot that they had.
Do you recommend that somebody get just general education, or should there be a kind of specialization process going on?
I would say to get your complete education and also to go into journalism before you go into broadcasting. But you know, for a lot of people who are natives and who don't really want to go down south and take their education up to learn a specific job for their life, it would turn them off. But it's better just to start into it slowly by doing some freelance work for some radio station or television station.
Comes a highway that seems to never end.
pressure and rigid time frames required for broadcasting conflict with native culture.
I don't think so. I don't think it makes a person lose his culture at all, because in the culture, they have to meet their deadlines, and things have to be timed precisely for certain things. And if he has an interest in the job, he'll fit right into the job. He'll meet deadlines. His articles will be timed right on. And I think it's part of the culture to be precise.
Is it difficult for a native broadcaster, say, to work in, for any native who would work in a job in which, say, he or she is the only native in the organization?
Speaking for myself, I don't have any problems with that at all. I see through my eyes, and what I see through my eyes is what I think. So it just doesn't bother me at all.
Do you find any difficulties, Rhoda, in that?
No, I don't.
What kinds of programs and services do you produce for your native listeners in Northwest Territories?
On the weekdays, we have a man in the morning, Ishmael Alunak. He does the morning show, and on the morning show, he gives out information items or news releases in the Eskimo language. And in the afternoons, Rhoda is on.
No morning too. Yeah, I start from 7 till 9 doing NWTNet. And again at 12:30 until 1:45.
What does this net, NWTNet, consist of?
Well, I've got 9 communities that picks up the broadcasting from Inuvik, the Central Arctic Tewaitin region, Baffin Island, and Resolute Bay. I do the work in Inuvik, but it goes out to Eastern Arctic only.
You essentially send out news and features?
Mm-hmm.
Are they all in the Eastern dialect?
Yes, they are.
No English?
I try to avoid English as much as possible, but sometimes it happens that I don't have the word in Eskimo, and you can understand it even if I said it in English. Then that I might say a word in English, but I describe what it means in case you don't understand it.
Like skidoo, right?
Mm.
Like the word skidoo. We use skidoo in the Eskimo language. It's adapted into the language. Like, we can't say motor toboggan or snowmobile. And the Eskimo word in the West, we say skidok, which means skidoo. Doesn't matter what kind it is, what brand it is.
But in Eastern Arctic, some, you know, you would meet some people who would say Kamutalyak, especially around Baffin Island. Mainly Frobisher Bay and Clyde River, those communities would say Kamutalyak for skidoo. But everywhere else, skidoo is skidoo.
I've attempted communication with Inuit people of Alaska, and I found that I get across to them and they get across to me. There's a few words that I don't have any knowledge of at all, but we still can. Let's put it this way, our communication barrier is not blocked.
For me, it's really strange because being from Eastern Arctic, for some very strange reasons, I seem to understand Alaskan dialect more than Inuvialuit in Western Arctic. I don't know what communication there is between Eastern Arctic and Alaskan, but I understand Alaskan dialect more than I did with the Western Arctic when I first got there.
Can we have a sample of your language? Why don't you give a message? Some of our listeners speak Inupiat. Would you like to give them a message?
Rhoda Inuksovumatai Mama Alaska Miunu Nilkuzare Ogama Tämä tunga sitten tautuu tällä asuaro kovia sukkuvaa. Which is I'm Rhoda Inuksuk, and it's my first visit to Alaska, and we're very welcomed, and we're enjoying it very much.
I think it's really good. I look up to my hotel in Alaska, and I'm going to have to make it work. I'm going to be able to go to Inuit Hamani, and I'm going to be able to go to Inuit Hamani, and I'm going to Kuvailepäivätkä inuittaapkuat ilhimangittelua huvit halukuja, että tähän meni nuonemmin humittelutakaan. My name is Roy Goose from Holman Island, and I am enjoying my visit to Alaska. The people are very friendly, like my own hometown. You could say they're like my brothers and sisters, or father and mother. And whoever is out there in Radio Land, I say hello, very good hello, and hope you come to our country sometime to visit.
Recently, the Southeast Alaska Corporation, Sea Alaska, held its annual meeting and elected six members of its board of directors. One group, the Committee for Economy for Sea Alaska, attempted to elect its candidates for the six positions on the board. Committee member Carl Nelson explained why the committee failed. He told the Juneau newspaper, the Southeast Empire, that the committee told its members to vote for specific candidates, while the other organizations allowed their members to pool their proxy votes to elect only one candidate. One unsuccessful candidate from the Committee for Economy for Sea Alaska was Senator Frank Paratrovich. At station KTOO in Juneau, Dennis Harris prepared this report.
Frank Paratrovich has been involved in Native affairs for quite a long time. He served in the Alaska House and Senate. He was the president of the Alaska Senate. He's been active in the Alaska Native Brotherhood for many years, and he was around when the issue of Native land claims was first brought forward.
From the presence of Native organizations seemed to disregard the accomplishments of the AMB. This benefits that they're working on, their land settlement, the idea was worked out by the AMB.
How long ago?
There you are again. I'm all mixed up on the dates. So I can't give you the exact date, but this took place at Puna Convention you can check on that.
Mm-hmm.
And James Wickersham, who was a Republican and I happened to be a Democrat, he brought it up before the convention that we had every right to sue for the land that we own here in Alaska. If you folks get together and sue the government, and I'm sure you'll win the case. And William Paul Sr. was with him at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I think he was working with Wickersham in his law office in Juneau, but Wickersham is the man that gave us that idea. As a result of that, we met in Wrangell, what they called a conference to make a decision on the suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be one of the delegates from Kluak at the time, and I had the honor of making the motion to sue the government after due discussion on the proposition of suing, and it carried. And that's how this whole thing started. I never seeked to run for this office.
Uh-huh.
I figured that I served my time in working for my people, both in the legislation, brotherhood, and everything else. In fact, I've sacrificed a great number of my time to try to do something for my people.
Uh-huh.
And as I got in the position where I could convince other people to work with me in that direction, I took time to try to accomplish that. By that I mean in the legislature,
uh-huh.
and in union, started the Fishermen's Union on the West Coast, where we're getting about 4 cents for our pinks in those days. And we managed to get it up to about 10 or 12 cents, I think. And in fact, they're the ones that started me in politics. And I happened to head the union. And when we won our point, we gained really strength. And some of them thought that somebody should represent them in the legislature. And then they suggested my name. And I told them, I don't know nothing about politics. So you got to go. And that's how I got in.
You learned about politics.
Oh, right? I sure did, yeah. Incidentally, there's plenty of it, and it seems to come natural for the natives. I think some of these politicians should go to the meetings and probably learn something, too. Now, Juneau, which is a large center, Ketchikan is a large center, and they had some advantages there in influencing the voters. But the outlying areas, like Kluak, Heidelberg, those places, they're more or less handicapped. And whoever they sponsored as candidates had no chance whatsoever. That's my observation.
Why is that?
For the simple reason it costs money to campaign. You take a plane, you fly from one place to another, try to campaign, that costs you money, hotels and meals. They don't have that kind of money.
The way you see Alaska conducts its elections is about the same as a large corporation down south, like General Motors or U.S. Steel or somebody like that. But do you think that people find that confusing because it's not like a regular, conventional, simple, ordinary election?
I agree with you there because, for instance, with me too, with the little experience I've had in politics, the election method was a little different from...
People are voting proxies.
Yeah. It's hard to understand that and so forth. Now, in that connection, I think in as much as that you're dealing with people that's never had the background of participating in programs of that type, it seems to me they take a leaf from the book of the state and federal government method of holding elections. Each community have their own judges and so forth. It may be the corporation heads that appoint the judges in villages, whichever way they can handle it. But let them vote at their own villages, have their judges say to take in the votes, and then send them into headquarters, and just like we do in the state and federal government. Let it be simple, and it'll be fair, and I think people will be properly represented. You certainly can avoid some of this dissension. Everybody thinks there's something wrong the way it's being handled, but they can't explain it. And as you know, the experience that you have, that where there's doubt, where there's trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it is in this election method.
Mossy Davidson. As he said before, Frank Perasevich believes the proxy method of voting is too complicated.
This method that they're using should be explained. And they say, well, they're supposed to know and so forth, but you can't expect these people, and again, I protect the village group. They don't know. Somebody should come there and explain all that to them. Even though it was disappointing, actually, I wouldn't be human if I wasn't disappointed. But fortunately, I've been defeated politically too, so it don't mean too much to me. It's all in the game. But I gather this now. I'm a little encouraged to see the interest that was shown. I understand there were 70 candidates, which means, indicates to me that they began to wake up and see they better do something about the way some of these things are going. And I think if this method, if this, what I saw, keeps up next to two elections, I think you'll see a wonderful change, and perhaps they'll practice this term that they're using. I heard it all over the floor, team, we need a team to teamwork together. It's true, so I told a couple of them, it's one thing to have a team, but it's another thing to work together, and you're not doing it. So I think eventually this thing will work out. And I want to say this also, since I have this opportunity. I think that our leadership has had ample time to start some industry, means of realizing profit on the investments and so forth. And now that I think it's going on 6 years, and the only thing that I hear from different members is the increase in their salaries and so forth. They've all gone good salaries, and maybe it's worth it. I don't know. One of the main objections I've had to their method is not taking care of the old people. Now, the Brotherhood started this whole thing, and in the day the question came up by Wickersham, assuming the government, it was frankly all of them are dead now, particularly the men. Mm-hmm. And they got widows still alive, right in Clark, I know of two. They should help those two old ladies. Their husband worked hard for this to start it. Give them a little pension or something. It won't hurt to give them maybe $40-$50 a month or something like that.
You're thinking of something along the lines of the state.
Yeah, but that's the argument they use, is the state's supposed to take care of all of that and so forth. And it's not easy to get it. They don't, a lot of them don't draw that. And regardless of what the government, federal, is supposed to do for them, I think we owe it to them to give it to them from this fund so they get the benefit. They can put a limit on it. So after the people that were responsible for the movement die off, this program could cease to exist. Say, for instance, 5 or 6 years. 10 years, I would suggest, be the limit. Then by that time, they'll all be dead. It'll be new generations taking over. They wouldn't need any help. I don't see where this organization is. In the near future, I think it will change the program, and both sides will learn, and we perhaps will all get benefit from it in the end.
Frank Perasevich, the former state senator and the former president of the Alaska State Senate. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening to Potlatch.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production.